Jai Om Vishnupad, Paramahamsa, Parivrajakacharya, Asatara Satyashri Srimad is Divine Grace, Sesi Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj, Prabhupada Ki Jai. ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Nantakoti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai. Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai. Prem Shikaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda. Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaur Bhaktivinda Ki Jai. Shri Shri Radha Krishna Go Gopina Sharmakunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhana Ki Jai. Vrindavan Dhamma Ki Jai. Mathur Dhamma Ki Jai. Navadvip Mayapur Dhamma Ki Jai. Jagannath Puri Dhamma Ki Jai. Gangamaya Jamuna Devi Ki Jai. Bhakti Devi Ki Jai. Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai. Samaveta Bhaktivinoda Ki Jai. Gaur Premananda. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Nama Om Shivadaya Krishnapastaya Bhutalosha Mata Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nityananda. Namaste Sarasati Deva Gauravani Kachani Nidhisaita Sandhya Kishnapastaya Kishnapastaya. Namdeham Sri Guru Sri Yutana Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sarvajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Bitam Samsajivam Sadvoitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Bitamscha. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
July 18th, 2013, Sakadasi. Class from Hilo, Hawaii over Skype. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 7, The Son of Drona Punished, Text 37. Swapranamya para pranai.
Swapranamya para pranai.
Prapushnatya grina kala. Tadvadastasya hi shreyo. Yadoshad yat yadapuman.
Swapranan.
Swapranan.
One's own life.
One's own life.
Yaha.
Yaha.
One who.
One who?
Parapranai.
Parapranai.
At the cost of others' lives.
At the cost of others' lives.
Prapushnati.
Prapushnati.
Maintains properly.
Maintains properly.
Agrinaha.
Agranaha.
Shameless.
Shameless.
Kalaha.
Kalaha.
Wretched.
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 Tatvadaha.
Tatvadaha.
Killing of whom?
Killing him.
Tasya.
Tasya.
His.
His.
He.
He.
Certainly.
Certainly.
Shreyaha.
Shreyaha.
Well-being.
Well-being.
Yat.
Yat.
By which.
By which.
By which.
Doshat.
Doshat.
By the fault.
By the fault.
Yati.
Yati.
Goes.
goes
Adaha.
Adaha.
Downwards.
Downward.
Puman.
Puman.
A person.
A person.
To offer my obeisances to all the devotees. Achakapati Vishtaki Pisindhiyo Dhatapati Tanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. A cruel and wretched person who maintains his existence at the cost of others' lives deserves to be killed for his own well-being. Otherwise, he'll go down by his own actions. Purport. A life for a life is just punishment for a person who cruelly and shamelessly lives at the cost of another's life. Political morality is to punish a person by a death sentence in order to save a cruel person from going to hell. That a murderer is condemned to a death sentence by the state is good for the culprit, because in his next life he will not have to suffer for his act of murder. Such a death sentence for the murderer is the lowest possible punishment offered to him. And it is said in the Smriti Shastras that men who are punished by the king on the principle of a life for a life are purified of all their sins, so much so that they may be eligible for being promoted to the planets of heaven. According to Manu, the great author of civic codes and religious principles, even the killer of an animal is to be considered a murderer, because animal food is never meant for the civilized man, whose prime duty is to prepare himself for going back to Godhead. He says that in the act of killing an animal, there is a regular conspiracy by the party of sinners, and all of them are liable to be punished as murderers, exactly like a party of conspirators who kill a human being combinedly. He who gives permission, he who kills the animal, he who sells the slaughtered animal, he who cooks the animal, he who administers distribution of the foodstuff, and at last he who eats such cooked animal food are all murderers, and all of them are liable to be punished by the laws of nature. No one can create a living being despite all advancement of material science, and therefore no one has the right to kill a living being by one's independent whims. For the animal eaters, the scriptures have sanctioned restricted animal sacrifices only, and such sanctions are there just to restrict the opening of slaughterhouses and not to encourage animal killing. The procedure under which animal sacrifice is allowed in the scriptures is good both for the animal sacrifice and the animal eaters. It is good for the animal in the sense that the sacrificed animal is at once promoted to the human form of life after being sacrificed at the altar, and the animal eater is saved from grosser type of sins. In parentheses, eating meats supplied by organized slaughterhouses, which are ghastly places for breeding all kinds of material afflictions to society, country, and people in general. End of parentheses. The material world is itself a place always full of anxieties, and by encouraging animal slaughter, the whole atmosphere becomes polluted more and more by war, pestilence, famine, and many other unwanted calamities. Swaprana nya para pranai prapushnatya guna kala kala tad vadhas tasthi shreyo yad doshad yatara puman. A cruel and wretched person who maintains his existence at the cost of others' lives deserves to be killed for his own well-being. Otherwise, he will go down by his own actions. So this is the essence of sin. The essence of sin is exploitation. To get for yourself at the cost of others. And here is one of the most gross and horrible kinds of exploitation, that to maintain your life, others actually die. I kill others so that I live. But anything where I'm living at the cost of the lives of others, even in a less gross way, I'm getting my pleasure by giving pain to others. The thief, I get my money by taking money from others. The rapist, I get my pleasure and power by stealing from another's body. And even if we take somewhat lesser than that, I'm getting my food by destroying the soil, by polluting the soil.
I'm making money by cheating the customers, giving them an inferior product. Anything where my pleasure is dependent on another's pain. This is the essence of sin, to take. It is the opposite of reality. It is the opposite of truth. It is the essence of illusion. That which is not, Maya means that which is not. To have happiness at the cost of others is the most intense form of illusion, and one could say is the essence of illusion. Reality is quite different. And this essence of illusion is the cause of all of our suffering. Here Srila Prabhupada is giving very specific kinds of manifestations of this illusion and specific reactions. He's saying that if you eat animals killed in the slaughterhouse, that you will have a society full of more and more war, pestilence, famine, and many other unwanted calamities. This is, of course, the present world situation in a nutshell. The world is full of war. I think at any one time there's at least 40 different wars going on in the world, and there are certain parts of the world that are so unstable due to war that people can't even have the basic necessities of life. You know, you have a country like Somalia where there hasn't been a registered tourist in like 16 years, and anyone who goes to the country is told to have at least 14 armed bodyguards just to get from the airport to wherever they're going. And people can't even get proper food or proper water without being in fear of their lives. And there's many other places in the world like that where wars have gone on for decades and decades, generations growing up not even knowing anything beyond war. And famine. Now, Prabhupada often talks about how there's no need for any famine, that God supplies everyone. And yet, we find there's places in the world that are full of famine, full of pestilence and disease and many other calamities, crime. Right? I was recently in South Africa, and they say, here in South Africa, we have no natural catastrophes. We have no tsunamis, we have no earthquakes, no volcanoes, tornadoes, etc. But the place is so full of crime that everyone's house, everywhere, is covered by gates and barbed wire and broken glass, razor wire and armed guards and dogs and so forth. Well, this is not how human beings are meant to live. But these gross kinds of horrible sufferings are a direct result of the murder that is going on, particularly of the poor animals. So sometimes Prabhupada would say that we are not preaching vegetarianism, we are preaching prasadarianism. And we will talk today a little bit about prasad. But we also find many purports like this, where Srila Prabhupada is simply talking about don't eat animals, be a vegetarian, don't live at the cost of the lives of others. And not only are so many animals being killed, but their lives before their wretched death is also just full of pain. They're being cramped up in these little boxes of crates, shoved often with other animals. They have no room to turn around in their whole life, no room to move. They're often wallowing in their own excrement. And they're given all kinds of unnatural foods and drugs, so that they become fatter, faster. Sometimes, like certain birds, are kept in darkness their whole life as a way to make them very fat, very fast. So they'll get fatter in half the time and to maximize profits. So these millions and billions of animals, and they brag, you know, McDonald's billions and billions, they're bragging. Now these billions and billions of animals live lives of pain, from birth to death, simply pain and torture, and then they die in horrible ways with beatings and electric shocks, and all simply so people can sit down and have something to eat that has some taste that they like. How horrible. And then not only that, all the aborted babies. So maybe people in modern society, like Prabhupada says here, the killer of animals to be considered a murderer. Because, after all, everyone is a soul. Right? Vijayavanaya sampane brahmane gavihastane suni chaivasupake cha pandita samadarshina. Pandit sees that all living beings are equal souls. But at least these foolish people in the mode of passion and ignorance, at least they know that killing another human being is a murder, even if they don't understand that killing an animal is murder. And they're killing not only human beings, they're killing their own children. And who's killing the child? The mother. So when a mother kills her own child, it becomes headline news. Mother kills her child. It's such an unusual thing. And generally, when the mother kills her child, she's considered mentally ill. What sane mother would ever kill her child? Inconceivable. Just the fact that the mother has killed the child, just that fact alone, renders the public inclined to think that the woman must be mentally imbalanced. And yet, these abortions, the women are killing their children. Of course, there are some times where the father is forcing the abortion. So I've spoken to a couple of devotees. One of them who told me before she was a devotee, that an Indian lady, she told me that she was the one maintaining the family. She was the one working and bringing in all the money for the family. And when she got pregnant, married lady, the husband said, "You must have an abortion." And he started beating her when she refused to try to force try to kill the baby himself. Sometimes the families are forcing an abortion. I know of one devotee, before she was a devotee, who was pregnant, and her parents, she was underage, forced her to get an abortion. So the mother, the father, the grandparents, they are forcing this. Right? And why? For their own sense gratification. "Oh, I hadn't finished my education. I don't really want to take care of this baby. It'll interfere with my life. So let me kill it." I mean, we read in the 16th chapter, it says the demoniacs say, "This person has interfered with my plans, therefore I will kill them. And my next enemy will also be killed." And we think, what kind of horrible person thinks like this? But anyone who's having an abortion is thinking like this. "Oh, this baby's interfering with my plans. Or this baby will cause me some social embarrassment. So let me kill them." Horrible. And there was an article recently in the New York Times saying, "My abortion at 23 weeks, because there's a move in America now to restrict abortions to up to 20 weeks. And this woman was saying how she married very late, and she had conceived a child through IVF. And then they wanted to have another child, so again they conceived through IVF, and she was pregnant with twins. And the doctors told them that one of the twins had some sort of a defect and might not live long after birth. And so the mother decides to kill the child. And she describes, she says, "I'm going to kill my baby," in this article. And she said, "We were watching on the sonogram as they stuck a spear into his heart." And she said, "Better he dies in the nice warm womb." I thought, why don't you wait till he's born and then let him die in your nice warm arms? You know? And who knows if the doctors are even right? One devotee recently submitted an article for Back to Godhead where their child was diagnosed with the same condition, but actually he ended up being fine, and he's now 10 years old. So this is the horrible condition that people, "I don't want to take care of a defective child, let me kill it." Or, "I don't want a girl child, let me kill it." Or, "I don't want to be embarrassed, let me kill the child." And then we're surprised why there's so much disease and war and catastrophe in the world. And it's the direct result of this very gross form of sin. But frankly, all of our suffering is due to this same sin. I mean, we can nicely sit in our homes and have some pride in our vegetarianism and our pro-life stand for babies, and some pride, perhaps, even in our eating only food offered to Krishna. Yajna shishtasya santo. Muchante sarvakilbi shai bunchate te ptum papam ye pratat yet pakadanath. So papa, those, well, we are free even from the sin of killing vegetables. Jivo jivasya jivanam. After all, there is some exploitation written into the fabric of the material world. And we may be proud, oh, I'm not doing that. I'm not living at the cost of the lives of others. But if we are suffering, that's indicative that to some extent we are doing that. Because that is the essence of illusion. It is the essence of sin. To get my pleasure by hurting others. And if we really deeply examine, one of my friends just yesterday wrote something that I thought I was such a nice person, but now I see that I'm also an exploiter. So if we also examine deeply, then we will find that we are also exploiters. The basic mood of a conditioned soul is exploitation. How can others serve me? How can I be the center? How can I get pleasure by taking from others? Now, if one's a little civilized, then one will at least want an exchange. One won't just take, but one will try to give something in return. So the husband wants pleasure from the wife, and in exchange he takes care of her. The wife wants pleasure from the husband, in exchange she serves him, and so forth. But still, if the basic mood is to take, I give this example many times, that we're always happy when something's on sale. We don't complain. We don't go to the store owner and say, "My dear store owner, I don't want to buy this thing on sale. I want to pay full price. Because if I buy it on sale, maybe you're losing money." In fact, Prabhupada has so much understanding this psychology, says that the Vaishya, in order to make a living, has to lie to the customers and say, "Oh, I'm not making any profit off of you." Do we go to the shopkeeper and say, "Please make a profit from me"? No. We don't have this mentality. Our mentality is, let me get something for less than it's worth. Let the other person give more. And this is true for a conditioned soul in all of our relationships and all of our dealings, whether it's our dealings with inanimate objects, whether it's our dealings with animals, whether it's our dealing with other humans. This is our basic mentality, and it is the root of all of our suffering. And if we claim that we don't have this mentality, but yet we are suffering, then we're being dishonest with ourselves. It's like there's this verse in the Bhagavatam that when one chants Hare Krishna, if one experiences some symptoms of ecstasy, such as one's hair standing up, shivering of the body, crying, but even after experiencing those symptoms, if one's heart doesn't melt in love, then one must have a steel heart. And in the purport, it's explained that this steel heart means offenses. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur very nicely explains in Madhurya Kadambini that a person may claim, "Oh, I'm not committing any offenses." But if they're not experiencing love of God, they must be committing offenses, because love of God is our natural state. So in a similar way, if we're not experiencing life with a thrill at every moment, if we're not experiencing unbounded joy, then we must be exploiting. Well, why is that? Because unbounded joy and love are a natural state of the soul. The soul who's not exploiting, the soul who's in truth, will automatically feel those things. One doesn't have to endeavor for them. They're part of the nature of the soul, Satchit Ananda. Jivera Swarupaya Krishna Nityadasha. That's the The natural state of the soul is to be full of bliss in giving. That is truth, and that is joy. So let's first look at the absolute truth, Krishna. Bhaktaram yagatapasam. Ah, you can say, Krishna, he's also exploiting. Bhaktaram yagatapasam. I am the enjoyer of all sacrifices and austerities. Whatever trouble you take, when we take trouble, when we do sacrifices and we do austerities, we're doing that because we want to enjoy something. We work hard in school even though we hate it because we think then I'll get a degree and then I'll get a better job and I'll get more money. We work hard at a job that we hate so we can get money or we can get prestige. Whatever sacrifices we're doing it because we want to enjoy something. But Krishna says, I'm the enjoyer of sacrifices. What is that? I work hard and someone else enjoys the fruit? Isn't that the very definition of exploitation? I work hard and then that's what the communists did. Everybody works hard and then gives everything to the state. And the state just gives you a little pittance. People lost their enthusiasm to work under communism in the Soviet Union. The fields were not even producing. People ended up starving. But yet, no, Krishna is not an exploiter. Krishna is not an exploiter. Yes, he's the enjoyer of all sacrifices, but that's like the stomach. He's the enjoyer of all food. Is the stomach exploiting the rest of the body? No, the stomach is giving to the rest of the body. Everything the body has is coming from the stomach and the lungs. So Krishna is giving everything to all living entities. Even to the conditioned soul. Krishna says, I join with the air of life to digest foodstuffs. I am fire of digestion. He is the very food. And Prabhupada says in that purport that Krishna is giving everything. Right? Let's find that purport. That's 15:15. That God is simply giving. Even to the conditioned souls, even on a material level. So Prabhupada says here, the Supreme Lord is so full that for the deliverance of the conditioned soul, he's a supplier and digester of foodstuff, the witness of his activity, and the giver of knowledge in the form of the Vedas. And as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, the teacher of the Bhagavad Gita, he is worshipable by the conditioned soul. Thus God is all good, God is all merciful. So Krishna is so good and merciful that he's giving the conditioned soul all facility for their sense gratification. Everything, whatever they desire, eko bahunam yo vidadati kaman, he's giving them whatever they desire, even an illusion. And for the liberated soul, kalpa viksha laksha briteshu, chintamani prakarasadmashu, he's giving a land where the ground is full of wish-fulfilling gems. The trees are desire trees. Whatever you want, you can have. He gives the living entities swarupya, a form equal to his, samipya, sarshti. He gives the living entity opulences and power equal to his. Krishna is not envious. So he is simply giving. Actually, whatever we have is the gift of the Lord. And he's giving even to the envious. As Jesus says, the rain is falling even on the ocean that has no need of rain, on the rocks. So Krishna, who is full of joy, is full of joy by giving. Prabhupada says for the pure devotee that they're holding Krishna in their own hand. Krishna becomes a servant of the pure devotee. When the older gopis are saying to Krishna as a little child, if you want this sweetmeat, you dance, he dances. He follows their order. And the gopis say, no, you can't come in. And Krishna's bowing down and begging, please let me come in. This is Krishna's mood. But even for the criminals, It's not just that Krishna's giving himself to the gopis. Krishna's given himself even to the worst reprobate, to the demons. Vitasmatir ganam apohanam cha. Where are the demons getting their intelligence? From Krishna. Where are the demons getting their life, their food? From Krishna. So that is truth, reality. The ultimate reality is giving, and the ultimate reality is full of joy. And this is true, of course, not only for Krishna, but for us. Mamai vamso jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana. We are part of Krishna, and our sanatana dharma is to serve, is to give. Our sanatana dharma is to find our happiness in the happiness of others. Not, and the illusion is to find one's happiness in the pain of others. Very simple. Reality is to find your happiness in the happiness of others. An illusion is to find your happiness in the pain of others. Krishna, the absolute truth, finds his happiness in the happiness of others. Krishna Das Kaviraj describes in the 8th chapter of Madhya Lila how the gopis, they feel 100 times happier when Krishna's enjoying with Radharani, and Radharani feels 10 million times happier when Krishna's enjoying with the other gopis. And when Krishna sees this, he becomes happy. This is Krishna's happiness. Krishna's happiness is when he sees that the devotees are getting their happiness from each other's happiness. The devotees get their happiness from Krishna's happiness and other devotees' happiness. And Krishna gets his happiness from the devotees' happiness and seeing how the devotees are reciprocating with each other, getting their happiness from each other's happiness. That is love, that is truth, and that is joy. And the opposite is false and pain and suffering. Last night at dinner, one of the boys had made some raisin bread. And it's a big family here, one loaf of bread. It's not quite enough for everyone to have exactly as much as they want. And so they're having this big argument. I want to get more for myself. Again, this is the essence of material life. Now, one may make the argument, as we brought up earlier, jivo jivasya jivanam, that this world is designed in such a way. What does it say? Those who are devoid of hands are prey for those who have hands. Those devoid of legs are prey for the four-legged. The weak are the subsistence of the strong. And the general rule holds that one living being is food for another. So, of course, that's true on a gross level, as this verse is talking about, but it's also true on a subtle level. That in this world, one living entity is food for another. But the devotee doesn't live in that space. Yagya shishtasino santo, muchinte sarvakyobishani, punchite te tukampapam, ye pachantiyatmakaranat. We don't live in that space that one living entity is food for another. We're living in the space that everything is to be enjoyed by Krishna, and when Krishna enjoys, then we enjoy in truth. Therefore, we offer our food. This food is for Krishna's pleasure. And when Krishna's pleased, then naturally I am pleased even by food. And this should be true of everything that we do. One of the main emphases in Srila Prabhupada's books and lectures and general teachings is Yat Kiroshi Yat Ignasi Yat Dehosi Dadati Yat Yat Tapasasi Kantaya Tat Kirishvamarapanam. Offer everything to Krishna, especially food, but everything. Every thought, every action. This is for the pleasure of Krishna. And when one does that, then one feels full in Krishna. And then one doesn't feel, I need to exploit somebody else. A jiva who comes to this platform has no need, Krishna says, to depend on any other living being. One becomes Atmarama and Atmakama and understands that whatever I need, I already have. There's no reason for me ever to try to get happiness by taking from others. And one can practice this. It's not that one has to go on being an exploiter and then boom, one day when you become self-realized, then you can become a giver. No, one, the sadhana bhakti is to practice this. To practice non-envious, taking my happiness in the happiness of others. That doesn't mean there's no competition, but it's a non-envious competition. Taking my happiness in the happiness of others. And the real happiness of others is in connection with Krishna. And the ultimate other is Krishna. Getting my happiness from the happiness of Krishna and getting my happiness from connecting others to Krishna in happiness. That kind of happiness, because it's real, instead of bringing suffering, brings joy. And it's such a higher taste, param drisva nivartite, that one will become naturally disgusted at trying to get happiness from the suffering of others. But the only way to give up getting happiness from the suffering of others, which is what's causing us all of our own pain, is how one has to experience this higher taste. And everything we do, when we're sitting to chant in japa or in kirtan, are we trying to use the holy name for our own happiness? Or are we trying to give happiness to the Lord and the Lord's devotees? What is our absorption? When we are offering our food, are we trying to use Krishna as a karma negating machine? Or are we trying to give happiness, Rishikesha Rishikena Sevanam Bhakti Ruchite, to the senses of the Lord? In our dealings with other living beings, are we trying to take happiness in their happiness? This is something to be conscious of and to practice. Otherwise, if we live at the cost of others, then we will suffer. Our suffering is not due to our circumstances or other people. They are just the agents. Prabhupada's talking here, war, pestilence, famine, calamities. It appears, oh, I'm suffering because of the demigods, adi daivik, adi bhautik, adi atmik, other living entities. That's not a fact. In the sixth chapter, Krishna says, the state beyond all miseries is where one is relishing the self. What is the self, my dear friends? The self is a servant of Krishna. The self is a lover of Krishna. What is one relishing? One is relishing taking happiness in the happiness of the Lord. That Krishna's sense gratification is my satisfaction. That's how I'm designed. One relishes that. It's not just something impersonal. I'm just floating in the ananda of the jiva. And then there's no misery. Even if apparently, externally, there's misery, there's no misery. Misery all comes from living in illusion. I give this example many times, just like the person who built a house. I'm in a room right now, and there's two doors, and there's also walls. So if I try to walk through the wall, I'll suffer. That's not the fault of the builder or the architect. A wall is not a door. In the same way, when we try to live at the cost of others, when we take happiness at others' cost, it's like trying to become happy by walking through a wall. It's not reality. It's not truth. And would we want that to be truth? Would we want the truth to be that happiness has to be at the cost of others? Is that the truth we want? Isn't the truth we want that ultimate reality is that everyone gets their happiness at the happiness of others? What kind of a world would that be? We don't have to imagine what kind of a world that would be. All we have to do to know what kind of a world that would be is to read the Bhagavatam and read the descriptions of the spiritual world, to read the Brahma Samhita, to read the books of the Goswamis, the lovely dealings between Krishna and his associates, how they are all getting happiness at the happiness of others. And that we can experience, at least within our heart, at least for our own self. And by spreading Krishna consciousness and distributing Srila Prabhupada's books and bringing the Hare Krishna mantra to the world, our hope is that even on this earth planet in this Kali Yuga, that we can also experience, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, I looked at my house and there is Goloka Vrindavan. So we can experience that for the world. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Questions, comments, corrections, additions, subtractions.
All right. I have unmuted everybody.
Peruse, if anyone has questions or comments.
Hare Krishna, Mother Urmila. I wanted to ask, you mentioned that one can experience, one can be disgusted with exploiting others to get happiness only when they experience higher taste. Now my question is, sometimes how we arrive to that situation, let's say if we constantly making, let's say, offenses, and isn't it any time that we just have to understand it theoretically and do it to arrive to that point?
I don't think so. Because Rupa Goswami explains that the qualification for taking up Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti for the very beginning is taste. When we talk about even Adushraddha, when we talk about having this initial faith, we're not talking about something theoretical or intellectual or logical. Faith is something in the heart. It's something that's felt. Pratyaksha avagamam dharmam. Pratyaksha agamam dharmam. Dharma is pratyaksha. It has to be experience. Unless there's some experience, you can't even understand that what you're doing is exploitive. It you won't even see it. It will just seem normal. It's just like there's a phenomenon, sociologists note, that if people are living in a very horrible and repressive government, and then the government starts to ease up and starts to give people rights and facility, it's at that point that there's a revolution. The revolution doesn't come at the ultimate point of horribleness. It comes when some of the horribleness is eased and people see, oh, there's an alternative. There's something else. If all you've ever eaten in your life is chemical, non-food, if you've never eaten real food in your life, you're not going to become disgusted with it. It's what it is. That's what life is. So one has to have an actual experience of something higher. We spread Krishna consciousness not by just convincing people logically, but by Harinam Sankirtan, where people get a direct experience. And if you say the books are convincing people logically, that's not really true. These books are manifestations of Krishna and Srila Prabhupada's ecstasies. And people are having that. So I don't believe that one can be convinced simply theoretically from a Shastric position. And I also don't believe that someone who's practicing Krishna consciousness doesn't have any higher taste. I'm convinced that anybody, in order to stay in Krishna consciousness, I mean, there may be some people who are externally staying in Krishna consciousness, that's another thing. But if someone's actually staying in Krishna consciousness, they must be at least from time to time getting some glimpse of something higher. They have to be. Otherwise they wouldn't be able to continue. There are some situations, like I was just reading where Prabhupada says that if somebody's going to Vrindavan and simply doing business there and is going there to exploit, that they get no spiritual benefit at all from being in Vrindavan, which was just mind-blowing. I was like, wow. So that's also possible for any of the devotional activities. It is entirely possible to do externally the sadhanas of Krishna consciousness while at the same time just being so angry and so envious and so offensive that you're really not in spiritual life at all. That is possible. Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati also talked about people who think they're living at Radhakund, but they're living at Narakakund. They're actually living in hell. Such people are going to be extremely miserable, and they're going to be getting all their pleasure from things like ghastliness and anger. But most people are not in that category. Most people practicing Krishna consciousness are not getting all their happiness from ghastliness and anger by just going around and offending people. There are people like that. I've met some, but they're the exception. Most people are getting at least sometimes some higher taste. And generally, they're getting some higher taste on a regular basis. And that's, as Prabhupada says in the Nectar Devotion, what drives a person to do activity is the rasa they get from it. So one should examine, rather, and fan and celebrate whatever spiritual taste there is. And then everything else will naturally pale by comparison. Just like in Harinam Chintamani and also Madhurya Kadambani, the emphasis is on chant with attention, and then everything else will be taken care of. So to work with the taste that you have, take it, fan it. And then the disgust at material life will naturally arise. As I was just hearing Prabhupada said this morning, a rich man doesn't have to endeavor separately to drive away poverty. So in the same way, if we get the higher taste, we naturally will become detached. Detachment in and of itself is not an anga of bhakti. It is a symptom of bhakti.
Thank you. This is Brother Bhajan.
Oh, hi,
thank you. With reference to what you're just saying, and with also with reference to a comment that you were making earlier in your class, for example, am I offering this to Krishna for my own sense gratification or for Krishna's pleasure? This is usually, according to my understanding, this is usually the mentality of the Kanishtha Adhikaris, is that the bodily conception of life is still very, very strong there in us. And I remember listening to a lecture by Srila Prabhupada where he's talking about Ajata Sukriti, and after so much accumulation of Ajata Sukriti, one eventually becomes qualified to perform devotional service. So how do you reconcile your statements about there's no spiritual benefit from materialism when it seems to me that no matter what reason somebody goes to Vrindavan, for example, there's some Ajata Sukriti going on, and that means there's some spiritual benefit?
Let me just see if I can find that quote, because I just read it. I mean, like just yesterday. Let's see. I don't know. It's right here in this book. Oh, I don't think I'll be able to find it quickly enough. But I just read it yesterday, and I went, wow! What is that? Oh, here we go. Okay, it's, 1 second, let me change my mic here. Okay. Okay, this is a statement from Mudjalila 16.281 purport. Prabhupada says, sometimes materialistic people who have no spiritual understanding go to Vrindavan as tourists. One who goes to Vrindavan with such materialistic vision cannot derive any spiritual benefit. Such a person is not convinced that Krishna and Vrindavan are identical. He says, cannot derive any spiritual benefit. So I understand the differences in mentality. That is a person accumulating a gyatra sukriti, or are they accumulating nothing? That depends on the person's mentality. As far as the kanista adhikari, that's not just a person performing gyatra sukriti. The kanista adhikari, well, we could look at it in two levels. One is a person who's not yet started sadhana bhakti. What are their qualifications for sadhana bhakti? And the other is a person who's actually started sadhana bhakti. So if a person's, let's use kanista adhikari in the sense we generally use it in the Hare Krishna movement, and that meaning someone who's in the practice of sadhana bhakti, but is a neophyte, isn't particularly advanced, hasn't progressed to the stage of nishta, shall we say. So let's put it like that. Someone who's invited sadhana bhakti but not at nishta. So such a person is not just performing gyatra sukriti, because their desire is to work simply for the pleasure of Krishna. That's their desire, even if they're not yet doing it. And Prabhupada explains this nicely. And we will go to, so nice giving class by my computer, I can immediately just look all these things up. Prabhupada explains this nicely in Bhagavad Gita 3.31. And instead of trying to remember it and getting it probably somewhat wrong, I can just look it up. Bhagavad Gita 3.31, he says, in the beginning of Krishna consciousness, one may not fully discharge the injunctions of the Lord, but because one is not resentful of this principle and works sincerely without consideration of defeat and hopelessness, he will surely be promoted to the stage of pure Krishna consciousness. Just right above that he says, but an ordinary man with firm faith in the eternal injunctions of the Lord, even though unable to execute such orders, becomes liberated from the bondage of the law of karma. So even if we're not able in the beginning to work for Krishna's pleasure, we have faith in that. We say, yes, I believe that I should be working for Krishna's pleasure. So that's very different from a gyatra sukriti, which is an ordinary person who doesn't know anything about Krishna consciousness, but they see some devotee carrying a heavy book bag and they say, here, can I help you out? So that's a different level. They're not even thinking, let me please Krishna. But I would say that for the beginning devotee, at least they have, that they want to. I want to, want to, want to. And that, again, is quite different from somebody who may externally do something that's Krishna consciousness, but their motives are not even sukriti. Their motives are twisted. And for such people whose motives are completely twisted, there may not be, as Prabhupada says, in that purport, spiritual benefit.
Can we take that answer and reconcile that with the verse from Srimad Bhagavatam, Akama Sarvakamova?
Because Akama Sarvakamova, I'm going to Krishna. So if someone is going to the holy place, they're not going to Krishna. They're not saying, okay, well, I have a desire to make money. Please, Krishna, help me. They're just thinking, there's no Krishna. God's not real. It's probably saying they don't believe Vrindavan is Krishna. This isn't a holy place. This is just some opportunity to make money, all these stupid tourists coming, all these stupid pilgrims coming here because they think it's a holy place. I'll come and take their money. So that's not a kama sarva kama. It's not going to Krishna for your material desires. Going to Krishna for your material desires can be looked at on several different levels. One can be like Dhruva Maharaj, who had no desire in the beginning to advance in bhakti. He had only a desire to become rich and powerful. And he thought, okay, well, Vishnu is the best person to go to ask this. He's the best person to give me this. And akama can also mean that the devotee who does want pure devotional service, at least on some level, there's some desire or at least a desire of a desire for pure devotional service, but finds that they're still troubled by material desires. And rather than trying to fulfill them separately from Krishna, instead of going to Krishna with a cheating mouth and saying, Krishna, I just want to serve you, and then going to fulfill their material desires separately, they go to Krishna and they say, Krishna, I know I should just want pure devotional service, but I really want a new car. Or I really want a beautiful wife like Kardava Muni. You know, so that's also a moksha kama. Kardama Muni says, I know I shouldn't be asking for a beautiful wife and a perfect wife who's compatible with me because that's a material desire, but Lord, I'm going to you for it. So that's on a higher level than Dhruva Maharaj, who didn't even know at first that the goal was pure devotional service. But that, again, is entirely different from a demon who has no... He's not going to Krishna to get his material desires fulfilled. In that way, he's just trying to exploit Krishna and trying to use Krishna. He's not going to Krishna.
Pursue this one step further, if I may.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, great. When the devotee goes on Sankirtan, he's going to meet so many people who are inimical against Krishna. But he's going to try and give them a book. And my understanding is that Srila Prabhupada says that even if they touch this book, that they're going to go back to Godhead. So that's an indication of spiritual advancement. Perhaps I don't disagree with you, but the point is that they're envious. They don't really want the book. They may even have a bad attitude, but for the somehow or other, Krishna's arrangement, the devotee stops them, they look at the book, they may even throw it in the trash, because I've had that happen to me, you know. So if they even touch the book, it seems to me like there's still some spiritual advancement, even if they go into Vrindavan as a materialist, if they wanted to take a Bhagavad Gita and throw it into the trash.
It may be very minimal, but it seems to me that there's still some benefit somewhere.
Well, I mean, all I can say is Prabhupada has this purport where he says, no spiritual benefit. I mean, he says that. He says, any, cannot derive any spiritual benefit. So my humble suggestion is that we assume that for others, if they have any contact with Krishna, they're getting some spiritual benefit, because we can't possibly tell exactly who is getting some benefit in an Ajñāta Sukriti way and who's not getting any benefit because they're such a demon. And for ourselves, we should realize that my consciousness is very important. It's not just what I'm doing, because that's the point. The point is, it's not just the external activities in and of themselves. As also Bhaktivinoda Bhaktisanjaya and our Srila Prabhupada all say, that it's possible to chant Hare Krishna and just be chanting the alphabet, not be chanting the name at all. So that for ourselves, we should be very aware of our consciousness. And we should be striving to get our happiness in the happiness of Krishna, and striving to get our happiness in the happiness of Krishna's devotees. And as far as others, are they getting benefit or not? How do we know? We're not in their heart. That's not our business. But it's not that I can look at a certain person. There's Mr. Joe Smith. So when he touched the book, did he get benefit or not? Why not assume he's getting benefit? I'll be more charitable and I'll be kinder, and it's just a better way to think. But we should understand the principle that it is entirely possible. It's entirely possible for a person. There's this other, I'm sure I can't find it right now, but where Prabhupada was talking about those who saw Krishna when he was present on the earth and whether or not they went back to Godhead. And he said it depended on their mood in seeing Krishna. Because there's that statement by Bhishma that everyone who saw Krishna on the battlefield attained their spiritual forms. And Prabhupada said it depends on their, you know, did they go to Vaikuntha, did they go to the Brahmajyoti, or did it not have any effect at all? It really depends on the reaction of the person. So that principle is there. We're not ritualistic. It's not a mechanical process. Prabhupada says it's not by the mechanical process of hearing and chanting, but only by the mercy of the Lord. So it's explained very nicely in the Nectar Devotion that all these statements, if you just do this, you can get this, if you just do this, you get this, that these are all true. If you just touch the book, I don't know if I was going to go back to Godhead, although perhaps that's possible, but if you just touch the book, I think he said you get a good birth in your next life. Or just appreciate. So that's true. But that doesn't mean, Prabhupada says in Nectar Devotion, that it applies to everybody. Just by seeing the Rathiyatra cart, just by drinking the Charanamrita. That's true. Those things have that potency. But it's not that it's some sort of automatic forced thing. Because going back to God, it is ultimately a matter of the desire of the soul. It's not that, I remember Rita Nandamar saying this once, if you took just a bunch of materialistic people and put them in a spiritual world, they go, oh, here's a bunch of Hare Krishnas. This was found when Krishna was on the earth, that there were demons who came to Vrindavan, and they didn't appreciate, or rather they wanted to destroy it. Gosh, it even happened to Indra, who's a great devotee. So we need to understand the principle and not think it's just some sort of a ritual. It's not the idea that, if you just say this prayer and you eat this thing and you do this thing, then poof, doesn't matter what your heart is. The heart matters. So that's the principle. To look at others and judge, that's not wise. Let's look at others with charity and assume that anybody who has any contact with Krishna consciousness is making some advancement. Is that all right?
Thank you very much, Mataji. I really enjoyed your class.
Oh, thank you for your comments. They really add a lot of depth. I think we can take one more.
I have a whole lineup of questions from people that have been waiting for some time here.
Oh, we'll see. My problem is that we have a brand new grandbaby. Just a few days old. And I'm running the whole household and homeschooling 8 kids. And I don't have a whole lot of time in the morning. I really think I could take just one more. Sorry.
Nari Prabhu, would you mind if I ask this one question, please?
Absolutely, Ramana, and she go for it.
Okay. I got to switch sounds.
Okay. Let me see you. Let's see. So this is from a devotee who was brought up in a Muslim family. Once while watching a program on TV, there was a debate between a Muslim scholar and a Hindu scholar talking about vegetarianism. The topic was similarities between Hinduism and Islam, particularly they were debating on eating flesh is correct or not. The Muslim scholar commented that vegetarians say that animals have a sense of pain, that is why they should not be eaten, while plants don't have a sense of pain, but science has proved that plants also have senses. Many plants exhibit sense of pain. I need an answer to that comment in virtue of Krishna conscious guidelines. He is new to Krishna consciousness, somewhat.
Well, of course, our ultimate pat answer is that we're not just vegetarians, that we offer our food to Krishna. However, that answer isn't really relevant to this particular verse and purport where Prabhupada's not at all talking about prasadam, but simply talking about not killing animals. So in reference and in context just to today's verse and purport, not looking at prasadam, we can certainly say again, jiva sa jiva, jivo jivasya jivanam, that it is impossible in this world to live without giving any pain to anybody. That's not possible. You can't do it. That to some extent, we're living at the cost of others. Just when you build a house, so many living entities lose their house to give you a house. When you're walking on the street, you're crushing so many living entities in order to walk. So there's a large amount, not a small amount, but a large amount of violence that is inevitable, even for a person who lives so softly on the earth. You know, we have the people like Mahavir among the Jains. They traveled naked, and they ate only the food that naturally came to them, and they made no effort whatsoever for their own happiness. But even he's walking. You know, and they can put the cloth in front of their mouth when they're breathing, but there's entities that are small enough to go through the holes of the cloth. So to say I'm going to live with absolute, total ahimsa is impossible. So the question then becomes, what is the least himsa, what is the least violence that I can possibly do? And certainly the feeling of pain in plants is much, much less than that of animals. Plants don't have a brain. They don't have a nervous system. They're not functioning on that level. Another thing is that the vast majority of a vegetarian diet, at least it's possible, maybe with modern agricultural techniques, that's not what's happening, but at least it's possible for the majority of a vegetarian diet not to involve any killing at all. I mean, just like with animals. So we use wool, which has come from an animal. But that doesn't involve killing the animal. So in a similar way, you pick a fruit from a tree, you don't have to kill the tree, and even, frankly, the majority of vegetables and grains, you don't need to kill the plant. The wheat is harvested after the plant has naturally died. So the vast majority of a vegetarian diet does not at least necessitate any kind of killing. Although, again, in modern agribusiness, I'm positive that they engage in a lot of unnecessary killing of the plants. In fact, Prabhupada says in the fourth canto, I believe, that we're against the use of pesticides because we're not interested in agricultural produce that is coming from killing. So Prabhupada very much wanted us to do organic gardening, organic farming. I mean, we have some of our temples in India who thinks that's some kind of a Western, you know, superstition. But that is the mood of Srila Prabhupada. So it is entirely possible to live to have a vegetarian diet that involves very, very little violence. Again, you can't avoid all violence, but that it involves very, very little killing. And our ideal diet would be that you grow your own food, or you have your own proper farms where even the vegetables are not killed unnecessarily. I'm just thinking how I used to have a garden. I used to grow broccoli in my garden. And what you can do is you cut off the head of the broccoli and it grows more heads. You know, and then you keep cutting those, they get smaller and smaller, but you keep getting more and more heads of broccoli. Whereas, you know, in the main broccoli production, as soon as the main first head is grown, they cut off the whole plant and kill the whole plant. And it sort of struck me how it's not necessary to do that, right? So even if you think of root vegetables like a potato, you know, you can just use part of the potato, and then if you just plant even a piece of a potato, again, it grows. So even when you're talking about root vegetables and tubers, there's ways to eat without killing. So that's entirely possible. But even if you say there's some killing involved, I mean, the relative violence it's extreme. The difference in suffering between a carrot and between a goat that's being slaughtered is extreme. It's not like it's a small jump, but it's a huge jump. Okay?
Your questions by email?
Nope. Right now, no, because I'm not even able to keep up with my email right now. I'm able to be on my computer, you know, at most like half an hour to an hour a day right now. So maybe in a couple weeks, but right now I'm really up to my ears. I just have my nose above the water.
Thank you for giving class.
Oh, that's my life. Without that, I would shrivel up and die. Jai, all glorious to Srila Prabhupada.